This is a Federal News Network podcast.
The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Sean Kelly, who is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Cyber Chat with Sean Kelly, former CISO at EPA and former deputy CIO at Veterans Affairs on Federal News Radio, part of the Federal News Network. Cyber Chat, where government leaders come to discuss the hottest cyber topics affecting us today. Now your host, Sean Kelly.
Today we're going to be talking to Bill Zielinski, Assistant Commissioner, Information Technology Category at GSA, and Larry Hale, Director, IT Security, Information Technology Category at GSA. Gentlemen, thank you for joining me today.
Thanks for having us.
So, to make sure that we all understand what we're talking about, what is the Information Technology Category at GSA?
Sure. At GSA, we're in the Federal Acquisition Service, so we really act as a buyer on behalf of agencies. And what we do in the IT category is we build and maintain a series of very large pre-competed government-wide acquisition contracts. In essence, what we do is we really set the floor for terms and conditions, and we set the ceiling for prices. Every year, the federal government buys about $65 to $70 billion in technical capability through contracts, and about $26 billion of that goes through the contracts that we maintain on behalf of agencies.
And do you notice that agencies like to use GSA's vehicles versus trying to, there was when I was in the government, everybody wanted their own. And so do you find that they're going to yours more now?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things that are pushing them more towards using these government-wide acquisition contracts. For one, just speed of acquisition, right? Since we've already pre-competed these contracts, all of those terms and conditions, the things that we've already competed, those are things that can't be protested in the next level, and it also speeds the acquisition. And again, we set up a secondary level of competition for pricing. So generally, agencies who use our vehicles are going to get better pricing and be able to move through their acquisition faster. In addition to that, this administration has put in place in the president's management agenda, a cross-agency priority goal for category management that actually measures how well agencies are using these kinds of vehicles. So yeah, we're seeing a lot of movement, both based upon the ease of use, but as well because it's being measured.
I was going to ask you about ease of use, but I would also imagine it helps leverage the buying power of the federal government by having these centralized contract vehicles.
Oh, absolutely. We have a lot of examples where, whether it's through one of the vehicles that are already in place or through specific BPAs that we place on top of these vehicles, that agencies really get great pricing.
If I could add to that as well, it frees up the limited acquisition professional resources in the agencies to do their mission-critical acquisitions, because the things that we have at GSA are available to everybody, and we've done the competition, we've done the acquisition legwork, and so it's a lot easier, more streamlined to get those common things through GSA and then focus their agency acquisition professionals on the mission-critical things that are unique to that agency.
And I think that's outstanding because there is a shortage, and it is hard to sometimes get even in touch with contracting shops. And so from the contractor side, how does having centralized vehicles help?
You mean from the point of the vendors?
The point of the vendors. Vendors.
I think what we see is where you have these large pre-competed acquisition contracts in place, it really is a means by which the vendors themselves can really focus attention, right? So when they work with agencies, they'd actually prefer that agencies work through one of these contracts, because a lot of the things, again, just for them as well, kind of the ease of use and being able to help them through that process. A lot of positive feedback from the vendors who are part of these contracts.
Outstanding. So, we're talking about acquisition. We have to talk about the supply chain. What is cybersecurity supply chain?
Yeah, so I've been with the federal government for 30 years, and 20 of those has really been spent directly in technology. I was an agency CIO previously, and I'll tell you that over the last 10 years, you're seeing quite a bit of a change in the environment, right? I think there's this growing recognition that there's a lot of risk in the environment. And those days in which agencies would just buy what they needed and then afterwards figure out how to protect it, there's a recognition that that's not really the best path going forward. So what you've seen over the last 5-6 years is this recognition that we actually have to be thinking about security as it relates to the things that we're buying, from whom we're buying them, and understanding the risk that could be inherent there. So when you talk about supply chain risk management in this context of the federal government, you're really bringing together kind of three different areas, right? One of them is that area of IT security. So bringing those folks in, like the chief information security officers who understand kind of from a cybersecurity perspective where those risks are. the acquisition specialist who understands supply chain management, and then also that piece of risk management. So it's bringing those elements together, introducing those much earlier in the acquisition lifecycle so that at the point that we're actually making a purchase of a technical capability, we have assessed those things and they are actually part of how we go about buying our technical capability.
And are you seeing from the agencies greater acceptance of this? I mean, this is awesome. I mean, this is what you want, but are the agencies appreciating all that that's going into this?
Yeah, I'll start and I'll turn to Larry to add to this. But there's a couple of things that are driving this, right? I think, number one, you are seeing just that interest that's being generated by the Hill, for example, the 114th Congress. From the 114th Congress to the 115th Congress, there's a tenfold increase in the pieces of legislation from somewhere in the 20s to the 200s of the pieces of proposed legislation in and around IT security and supply chain risk. So that's driving a lot of interest. You see provisions like the Section 889 of the National Defense Authorization Act of 2019 actually has requirements for agencies to address supply chain risk. And then, of course, in December of 2018, there was the Secure Technology Act that actually put in place a Federal Acquisition Security Council and also requires agencies to document and assess the risks that are associated with their supply chains.
Yeah, there's not much to add to that. The specifically cybersecurity supply chain, though, Sean, is it's all the way from the manufacture of the equipment, the components that go into the equipment, the installation. In other words, the risk points can be how the device was designed, what went into the chips, what went into the actual firmware, what applications, and you can have something that you think is fine and secure, and then a firmware update can add risk to it. So it's a complete life cycle risk management discipline that's needed. So even to disposal of the item, it is possible that there could be, like in your printer, that there could be some collection going on inside that doesn't transmit to anyone, but when the device gets disposed of, somebody's able to pull that chip out and download all the memory of everything that was ever printed on that printer.
Yeah, so Sean, as you can tell, very complex environment.
Agreed, yeah.
And your question was, are agencies receptive? Absolutely. I think because of this complexity, they're looking for any of that help and assistance and understanding what they can do to buy down their risks that are associated with their supply chain.
So, because that is very complex. So is ITC tracking this equipment for its full life cycle, or is there a point in which it's handed off to someone else?
So there are a number of different things that we are doing within the IT category, right? So I mentioned the Section 889 mm-hmm. of the National Defense Authorization Act. What we actually do is we work very closely with our more than 5,000 providers of IT services and products. We're actually getting specific information to them and asking them to make representations relative to the equipment and the services and the things that they use. So we're being proactive through the Section 889 of really making sure that the vendors and providers understand what their responsibilities are. And then we also are doing a number of targeted initiatives working with the Department of Homeland Security and the Office of Management and Budget and taking a look at those ways in which we can use information to really pull together information that helps us understand where those risks might be, both at the equipment level and at the entity level, the providers themselves.
And how does supply chain or cybersecurity supply chain help share information amongst the agencies better?
Well, it really is a team sport. And we have to partner. We are partnering with Homeland Security, with DOD, with the intelligence community, because no single entity in that chain can have all the information. And so there's an absolute need for the sharing of information so that if a vulnerability is found, if a problem is found in a certain piece of technology, that we can't expect every agency to find that out for themselves. We've got to work together with the sources and disseminate the information.
And Sean, I mentioned that Secure Technology Act that was passed in December of 2018. As part of that, it set up something called the Federal Acquisition Security Council. We, GSA, have a seat on that council. It's actually chaired by the Federal Chief Information Security Officer, but it also includes representatives on the council itself from the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, the Federal Bureau of Investigations, the Department of Homeland Security. So a lot of those entities that are directly responsible for gathering that intelligence bringing that intelligence together. One of the main purposes of that council is to foster that information sharing and to develop kind of operational rhythms for how that information can be both gathered and deployed throughout the system and how it could be used within the acquisition process.
My guests today are Bill Zielinski, Assistant Commissioner, Information Technology Category, and Larry Hale, Director, IT Security, Information Technology Category at GSA. Gentlemen, before we were going on, we were talking about information sharing. But how does cybersecurity supply chain reduce duplicative supply chain activities within the U.S. government?
So thanks for asking, Sean. There are a number of examples of GSA's activity that reduce those duplicative efforts by offering—
You did better with duplicative than I did, by the way.
By offering security screening that's built into the solutions. Good examples are FedRAMP, which is cloud security, where it's done once and the authorization is then used by multiple agencies. Continuous diagnostics and mitigation, another area where DHS develops an approved products list for continuous diagnostics and mitigation tools. And we at GSA then put those approved products on a special item number to make it easy for agencies and state and local governments to get those same tools. Addition to that, the high-value asset program. Mm-hmm. So when agencies identified their high-value assets in response to the OPM breach, DHS put together a program where they would go out to the agencies mm-hmm. and evaluate mm-hmm. all those high-value assets, assess the security of those high-value assets.
Great.
Hundreds and hundreds of high-value assets across the government, and DHS soon realized that it would take years to do it. So GSA stepped up and said, we can do industry contracts. The White House asked us to work with DHS, use their standards, use their methodologies, the OMB-approved methodologies, and get these companies on contract to go out and do these high-value asset assessments. That's called HACS, Highly Adaptive Cybersecurity Services, and it's really helped be a force multiplier for DHS that helps the agencies secure their high-value assets across the board and not have to get on a waiting list for DHS to come and do the assessment.
That's outstanding. And so and I can tell you that using other government services, you know, for example, this is not one of yours, but car wash at DHS was, when I was a CISO, that was great for me because I could send all my mobile applications and within a reasonable amount of time, got a thumbs up or a thumbs down. With HACS and some of your other vehicles, is there on-ramps or can, you know, someone listening to the show today can go onto the GSA website and say, you know, I want to get on that vehicle, or is there a waiting period or a time period they need to apply?
So it's an open solicitation to industry to get on HACS. But there is an oral technical evaluation.
Yes.
So we, as opposed to most of the IT schedule where it's simply a commerciality test. If you're providing something commercially, you can get on GSA schedules and provide it to the government. For HACS, because DHS and OMB set the standard of the methodology, mm-hmm. we actually schedule an oral technical evaluation. So there's the commerciality test, and then can you pass the technical evaluation to show that you understand the methodology for providing these high-value asset assessments.
And not only is it arranged, not only is it there's that evaluation to ensure that we have highly qualified providers that are there, but we've also arranged the different services and capabilities consistent with the NIST framework as well. You might want to mention a little bit about that, Larry.
Exactly right. So the services on the HACS, on Highly Adaptive Cybersecurity Services, include both proactive and reactive services. So we have incident response, but we also have cyber hunt, penetration testing, the full risk and vulnerability assessment, RVA process, which is aligned with the NIST cybersecurity framework.
And you may not know these numbers. What is roughly success? You know, do most people come in and do well, or is there a lot of people that come in and have to come back because it just was that rigorous of a test?
I promise you it's not a rubber stamp.
Okay.
I've been responsible for the HACS program for 2 years. And that was one of the things that I wanted to ask for myself was, how rigorous is the evaluation? In the past 3 months, I'm aware of we've had probably at least two a week pass. And in the past 3 months, I'm aware of about four that have not passed the evaluation.
Okay. Yeah, that is rigorous. So Before we go on from that last question with duplicative supply chain activities, is there any stories or success stories that you could share that of one that comes to mind that says, you know what, hey, this is one of those incidents that we were able to bring things down?
Yeah, I'll give an example, Sean. So I'll start with we put something in place called the Second Generation Information Technology or 2JIT program, which is really an indefinite delivery, indefinite quantity deliver a vehicle for initial use by U.S. Air Force. But what we really do in that program is it's a key operational component and evaluation factor is supply chain risks. And in essence, what we do is at the selection point, just in order to even be able to get onto that vehicle, that BPA requires each of the providers to have a full supply chain risk management program. For the original equipment manufacturers, there have to be letters of supply. There's vendor risk assessments that are associated with that. And it's not just a one and done. We actually maintain that information across the board. So as the providers are delivering those services, we continue to check to ensure. So this is going to place a level of assurity for the U.S. Air Force that as they're purchasing their products and services through this vehicle, that they have that level of assurance. And we know that that we've been monitoring kind of the security posture of those companies that are there. And this is a vehicle that's actually open to any agency across the government.
No, that's outstanding. And you mentioned policies and rulings kind of throughout the program, but is the Federal Acquisition Council kind of where GSA solutions align with federal security, cybersecurity policy throughout the government? Or are there other ways that you guys make sure that things align?
Yeah. So in terms of the specific risks associated with the supply chain, absolutely the Federal Acquisition Security Council is the mechanism with us having a seat to ensure that everything that we're doing and the services that we're providing to customer agencies are all aligned. That Security Council does have a lens absolutely on all of the other policies that are out there, but we actually work extremely closely with the Department of Homeland Security. So things like TIC 3.0 policy. We've been working directly on that working group with Department of Homeland Security to ensure all of our telecommunications and network backbone services are all directly aligned. The administration just recently put out a new kind of identity and credential management memorandum, and we've been actively involved in ensuring that all of our solutions are aligned to that as well as being able to assist agencies understand how they could be aligned. So we're constantly monitoring and working with all of the policy guidance groups to ensure that we are aligning everything that we're doing so that agencies know that when they use our services, that they're actually in compliance and getting the best services and products that they can.
Okay.
So it's an important partnership as well with DHS, with the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, the new agency that stood up with the mission of federal cybersecurity. So federal network resilience is their mission area. And so it's important for us to partner with them as they set policies and standards for federal agencies, that we align with those and that we have the products and services on contract and easy to get to and easy to use that agencies can consume to improve their cybersecurity and stay aligned with the DHS programs.
My guests today are Bill Zielinski, Assistant Commissioner, Information Technology Category, and Larry Hale, Director, IT Security, Information Technology Category at GSA. Larry, you mentioned working with DHS. And when we mention cybersecurity, I don't think we cannot have a conversation about DHS. What is GSA doing working with DHS to improve the cybersecurity posture?
So we partner very closely with DHS. And actually, recently, since CISA has been formed, the Cybersecurity Infrastructure Security Agency, we've revisited that partnership and had a summit meeting where we went through a number of our programs and demonstrated the different ways that our programs across GSA can support the mission of CISA as they work across the federal agencies. So we have identity credential access management programs. We have federal mobility. There's just a number of areas where we're providing services to federal agencies that align well with the initiatives and the mission area of DHS CISA.
Yeah, and a really great example, Larry mentioned the mobility. There's an example where there's actually a very strong and thriving community of interest, community of practice. Mm-hmm. That's a federal mobility group. It's aligned with the Federal CIO Council. The NASA CIO actually is one of the sponsors on the council. I work with them directly on the acquisition piece. It's co-chaired by the Department of Homeland Security as well as by GSA. And NIST has a lot of participation from DOD, has more than 100 agencies who are actively participating in the community. But they actually work to drive solutions and put in place roadmaps for what the technology will bear. They look for test beds. They actually work very closely together. And it's a great example of how that partnership has blossomed into a government-wide kind of a group that's self-managing.
And you guys do a lot of things. That's been obvious during this program. And when I was an agency CISO or the deputy CIO at VA, I have to be very honest with you, I am completely and 100% dependent on the acquisition professionals at that agency. So I don't know if I've ever worked directly with GSA. And, you know, so if I'm a federal government listener and I'm hearing all these great things going on, how do they start to touch GSA? How do they even start a conversation with their acquisition professionals and say, you know, I was listening to this great cybersecurity show called Cyber Chat. That's a plug, by the way. And I want to use this program. How do they do that?
So the easiest step is www.gsa.gov and then /cybersecurity. And that lists out our cybersecurity offerings. But more importantly, there are links there to answer your exact question. How do I use GSA? How do I get to GSA? And we've got, we actually have online chat. So you can talk to a technician and they will connect you with, in the case of cybersecurity, they'll connect you with me and my team. And in the Federal Acquisition Service, we have an outreach group, customer and stakeholder engagement, that specialize in working with agency acquisition professionals and helping them understand the benefits of using GSA. We team with them because we have the expertise in the cybersecurity field and in our solutions. And so they're very good at helping the acquisition professionals use GSA. We get in there and we team up because, as you pointed out, a lot of CISOs don't know the acquisition side. And so one of the great challenges is to get the program side and the acquisition side on the same page and understanding the benefits of using certain solutions. And so we've got teams that spend a lot of time working with agencies, walking them through the process, and helping them to make it easier.
And Sean, part of what we try to do is this show is a great example, right? We try to get onto these shows. I will tell you that every time that we do a show like this or I put out a blog or we post something else, we'll get two or three inquiries where folks will say to me, Bill, I didn't even realize that you all did that. Can I get your team out to talk to us? And as Larry said, we have a lot of mechanisms to be able to get the teams out there to have those conversations because, as you said, they're very dependent on their acquisition teams. And for a lot of these folks who are in the program areas, they're more focused on those particular capability areas. So what we like to do is get out here into the community and actually talk about those technical capabilities to make those kind of connections. And once we've established that contact, then we kind of pivot towards and what's the right way to purchase those things.
No, outstanding. I thought when you said this show is a great example, you want to stop there. But everybody knows I make a lot of jokes. But the question is industry. When I was a Fed and I was DHA, I also would rely heavily on my industry partners to help educate me. Is there a way for them to become smarter? Because, you know, obviously, and I hate to say this, I want to be able, everything has to be easy. You know, you're going a million miles a minute, you're trying to become easy. And so there'll be a times I'll be like, hey, that's a great white paper you just brought through the front door. That's a great X that you are telling me about. Now, how do I get to you? And so can industry also?
So that is absolutely a great question. And this touches back on one of your earlier questions from this chat. And that was the benefits to industry of using GSA. So everybody who's gone through the process of getting onto GSA, there's an incentive there to make sure that customers come to GSA and use these existing contracts instead of putting these companies through the added cost of going out and competing on one-off contracts.
Yeah.
So we find that industry tends to be one of our best proponents.
Agreed.
They're talking to the agencies. When they learn that the agencies are thinking about doing a solicitation in cybersecurity, they'll say, you should do that on GSA, and here's why. And generally, it's because I'm on GSA. And
agreed, right? Agreed.
When a company is on our contract, we won't do business development for that company, but we certainly do promote the vehicle and the and all the companies that are on the vehicle as a group.
Absolutely. That's the benefit.
Yeah, we're always interested in ensuring that our customer agencies always have the best, most qualified providers of technical capability that we can provide. So we're always interested in trying to get any company kind of coming to us through GSA. We also act as a force multiplier for them as well, right? Because rather than having to hit each individual agency one at a time, by working with us, if they are on our schedules or they're one of our other programs, then that means that they have that exposure kind of across the federal space.
Is there, and this, I don't know if there's a loaded question on it, so it's not meant to be, is there a list of agencies that commonly use the different vehicles you have more? So if I'm an industry person and I say, hey, I'm going to invest in this vehicle, I'm going to invest in this, I know that once I invest in this, these agencies more tend to use this than not. Is there such a list exist, or it might be a loaded question and it's unfair?
Yeah, Sean, I do think that every opportunity that is out there and the information about who is using which vehicle, that is available through Federal Biz Ops, right? So the FBO site provides that information.
Yep.
Not necessarily in kind of a checklist form.
It's beta.sam.gov now.
Right?
They just retired.
Gotcha. They just retired.
Thank you, Larry.
Appreciate that.
I didn't know that, believe it or not. That's just the thing. Because, you know, as I think Larry mentioned, it is an investment into these different vehicles. So if I'm a brand new cybersecurity company and I decide I want to go into the federal space, do I just start with local agencies, or is GSA a place I should be looking?
GSA is absolutely the place to be looking. And it's easy. The answer for how to start is the same, www.gsa.gov. And there's a drop down that says, I want to sell. And that then walks the company through the process of getting onto GSA. Say you're a brand new company, you're a startup, but you've got the next great thing. There in the past, there have been some perceived barriers, one of which was, I think I have to be in business for 2 years before I can come to GSA. We've clarified those rules and simplified the process now. So a brand new company can meet the 2 year experience with their key personnel. So if you and your partner have combined 2 years of experience in the field and you just started your company and just incorporated, that counts as the significant experience. So there's no longer that barrier to startups, and we want the innovation. We want the startups to get on. So that actually is called the startup springboard.
Okay. Outstanding. I could talk to you guys for another hour, but I want to thank you both for your time today in this show. My guests today have been Bill Zielinski, Assistant Commissioner, Information Technology Category, and Larry Hale, Director, IT Security, Information Technology Category at GSA. I am Sean Kelly. Thank you for listening. You can follow me on Twitter at Mr. Sean Kelly, and we'll see you next month. Thank you.
You've been listening to Cyber Chat with Sean Kelly on Federal News Radio, part of the Federal News Network. Tune in Friday mornings at 10:30 or subscribe to this show on iTunes or Podcast One.